Now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Yes, on with the show here on Stages here on 2SER 107.3. Good to be back with you again. And I'm Roderick Chambers, of course, and I'm here with Tricia Starrs as usual. Hello, Tricia.
Hi, Roderick. Great to be here.
It is. We've been seeing some wonderful theatre, haven't we, Tricia?
Oh, yeah. Last week we went out and we saw War Horse and David Williamson's last play, Crunch Time.
And when we say last play, we mean last.
Yes, that's right. He's actually retiring. I didn't know playwrights could retire.
Oh, it's not fair. Yeah, so that was wonderful. We enjoyed that. We're going to tell you a bit about that later on. Also, we're going...
Sir Regina Botros and myself went along to see the Dario Fo, No Pay, No Way. And here is a discussion that we had shortly after seeing the play.
We've just been last Friday to see No Pay, No Way by Dario Fo at the Sydney Theatre.
Because it was a huge success. So that's
obviously
all things...
why.
Yeah, all things dance in March... So
and
we've got
opera. We've got opera as well. We're very classical today, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Constantine Costi is coming in to talk to us about the Handa Opera on Sydney Harbour this March, which is fantastic. And we've also got two reviews from the wonderful Catherine Golden of two plays that she's been out to see as well.
Gosh. But all this and more coming up here on, of course, Stages, so stay tuned.
What are they doing to fix the economy?
Who knows what happened to our taxes? On the Money does.
Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrencies. What is all this stuff?
On the Money gives me the edge when I have to sort out my finances.
How will the budget affect me?
Everything you need to know about finance, business, and the economy.
How can you get the best out of your hard-earned dollar?
If your dollars don't make sense, listen to On the Money.
Thursdays, 7 p.m.
I love listening to On the Money.
Now, Con Costi, we are talking to you straight from the Opera House. You've just rushed out of rehearsal, haven't you?
That's right.
That's right.
I just left a room of about 20 dancers there, strutting their stuff and creating an amazing, dazzling party for the opening of the opera.
Oh, wonderful. Now, which opera are we talking about here?
We are talking about Verdi's La Traviata on Sydney Harbour.
Right. So this is the floating one that people just kill themselves to get tickets for, that's such a success. What are some of the things you have to do to make it work on a floating stage?
Well, I mean, it's an absolute spectacle. We've got, you know, the perfect backdrop of the Sydney Opera House and the Harbour Bridge. The set includes an incredibly large and glorious chandelier designed by Brian Thompson. So for me, it's really about working in this massive space using choreography, dance, 40-strong chorus to tell the story of one woman who's kind of overwhelmed by a world of glitz and glamour and decadence.
And, of course, I'm just dying to hang out for that lovely that duet in Traviata. Oh, everyone
absolutely
knows.
Absolutely. Gorgeous.
And who have you got in your cast there? Because I know last year was a smash hit. And who have you got singing this year?
So singing the lead role is a young soprano called Stacia Loam. Mm-hmm. And she's just one of the most vibrant, talented and kind of hardworking sopranos in the business. So she's sure to put on an absolutely incredible show. And her love interest, Alfredo, is played by the by a tenor from Kosovo called Rame Lahaj.
Hmm. Wow. And how many, do we get the full chorus and the full Traviata here?
I'll tell you what, we're throwing everything at this thing. We've got full chorus, dancers, principals, actors, and there's even a guest appearance cameo from a small dog who's going to be making it its stage debut.
Oh, no,
a
dogs.
A diva in the making.
Oh, my goodness, that's dangerous, isn't it, having a dog?
I know, it's what they say, don't they? Don't work with animals.
That's right. Is he a good swimmer or is she a good swimmer?
Don't worry, the dog will be kept far away from the water in the safe arms of one of our baritones.
Oh, thank goodness.
And for people who haven't been, where is the audience? I mean, if the stage is in the harbour, are you separated from the stage and from the performers, or are you all on the same pontoon? How does it all work?
So the stage is on the water, and then on the shore of Lady Macquarie's chair, that's where the audience are in set-up stalls and seating.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And so they're all microphone, you know, there's mics
that's
and everything.
That's right. They're mic'd up.
Yeah. And for the people who don't know, well, the basic plot of La Traviata, what is that basic plot of the story of the opera?
I mean, it's an absolutely fascinating story. And one of the things that most interested me in my directing of it is that it's based on a real person.
Mm.
She was a courtesan in Paris in the mid-1800s. And a courtesan is effectively what we call today something like a high-class escort. And she was a country girl who took over Paris, had amazing lovers, amassed all this wealth, was a cultural figure. But sadly, she had tuberculosis. Her name was Marie Duplessis. So she charmed the high society of Paris single-handedly, and she died at the age of 23. It was a really remarkable, extraordinary, and tragically short life. So this opera, La Traviata, is really closely based. It's almost close to a biography of this incredible young woman.
So, I mean, the only thing we could compare it to these days is Married at First Sight or something, isn't it?
That's right. It's the prototypical version of Married at First Sight.
My gosh, she packed a lot in the historical figure that it's based on. She packed a lot in for a 23-year-old, didn't she?
I'll tell you what, she partied really, really hard. And I think a big part of it was the fact that she knew she was dying from tuberculosis and decided that she was going to live every moment to its absolute max. So it involved romance, champagne, dancing. She wanted to be an actress. She lived really, really hard because she knew she had a limited amount of time. That makes the opera fun, but also kind of tragic.
But this is opera, isn't it? This is what it's all about. It's to the max. Everything is to the max.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's human passion at the highest levels. You know, these characters, in my opinion, it's when spoken word doesn't suffice and all you can do is sing to express your incredibly tempestuous and passionate inner life.
Oh, wonderful. And, of course, all in Italian.
That's right, all in Italian.
It'll test our Italian now.
We have surtitles, so nothing to worry about.
Oh, you've got surtitles? Beautiful.
Absolutely.
That's great. And, of course, you know, life and death, that's what it's all about, isn't it? And there's nothing that than death can bring you closer to life. And that's what this character is kind of all about, isn't she?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a really insightful comment. I mean, Verdi, before he called it the Traviata, the opera was titled Amore e Morte, or Love and Death. That's what's the heart of this thing.
Oh, doesn't that just get you? now you can travel to this on a water taxi. That where else can the world can you see do something like this? You can't, can you?
I'm telling you, there is nothing
is
else
it.
In the world like this. This is opera at its best. It's spectacle. It's passion. It's emotion. In one of the most gorgeous settings imaginable.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, it really brings our city to life. And I'm so glad that it's happening again because we have the most beautiful harbour in the world, don't we? And, you know, let's utilise it.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a Sydney boy, born and raised. Mm-hmm. I completely love the city and I think it's just completely beautiful. So why not use it almost as one of the greatest backdrops for a piece of theatre?
Yeah, and it sounds like you're really enjoying yourself doing this production too, Con.
Look, of course there are some daunting moments. I mean, it is opera after all, but at the end of the day, we're storytellers, and that's something that I love doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, how much? What's the capacity here? Is it easy to get tickets, or can you hang off a tree? Or
no, tickets are still available, I believe, but they're selling fast.
Mm. All right, so it's on.
So I'd recommend that people get in quick.
Yeah.
I know. Last year, I hear that more than 62,000 tickets were sold.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's a big one.
Yeah. So for this one, yeah, it's running until the 26th of April.
That's right, and in my opinion, it's the ultimate date night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so look, it's not as far away from maths as we think.
That's it.
So there'll be a bit of pashing down at Lady Macquarie's chair, you think?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe they can time it with our principles, you know? It's art imitating life.
All right. Con, thanks for sharing the passion with us. Really pleased that you could make it out of rehearsal to talk to us.
No problem.
Thank you.
I'm going to pirouette my way back into the room. I'll see you later.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
And this is a bit of the Italian drinking song, the Brindisi, with Joan Sutherland and Luciano Pavarotti.
You ancora.
This is 2SER 107.3 that you're listening to, and we're in a little show here called Stages, where we find out for you what's going on the stage in Sydney. And what's been going on one of the stages is the show that you've been out to see, Trish, Angry Fags.
Yes, that's right, Angry Fags at the New Theatre. And, of course, you can still get to see it. It's part of Mardi Gras, and it's running until March 15th. Now, it's unusual because it's a political drama, and Bennett and Cooper, they're roommates, and they're waiting for some mysterious event at a picnic that they've organised. And Bennett is part of a team behind Senator Alison Haynes, who is an out lesbian and a Democrat, and is having a struggle for re-election against Peggy Musgrove, a Republican. Now, all this gets thrown into the air, all of their relationships and what everybody is going through, when Bennett's ex is a victim of a gay bashing, and the response by the political class and by the media is outrageous, actually, and would make you quite mad. But Bennett and Cooper are the angriest, and so they are the ones who actually take action. It's directed by, very insightfully, I have to say, by Mark Nangle. I went to opening night, and it is a fabulous production. I have to give a special call out to Cooper Harlow, who plays Lockie Pringle, because he hits the nail on the head, I think, because this is black humour. I mean, I don't think this play is trying to say, if you feel angry, go out and do blow somebody up or murder somebody. But the black humour is wonderful in Cooper Harlow's very extreme character. And I really loved him because it was the humour was balanced between reality and terrorism, and also horror in this wonderful character. I enjoyed him so much. He really made me laugh. And like I said, I think he hit the nail on the head, because
she was saying all the characters had their flaws.
Yeah, they're all flawed characters, but a lot of them were very real for me.
Well, that's what makes it real, I think.
Yeah, it does make it real, but for me, that's why I liked this character, because he sort of encapsulated. I don't know if you ever saw the old movie Network from the 1970s.
Oh, yes.
But it's a bit like
Mad as Hell.
I'm mad as hell.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
And I'm not going to take it anymore. And I think that's what this is all about. It's not inciting violence, but it's saying, what if? What if, you know, I can't take it anymore, and what if I did this? What if I can't take homophobia, and I can't take the media, and I can't take the political class anymore? What if I did this? And I think that's what it's about. It allows us to dream of that violence and dream of that revenge that we all secretly hide within but don't act on. And so I enjoyed this production very, very much. I don't think it really matters that most of the characters are gay, because they're just really real people in very real situations.
We're very inclusive here on stage. It doesn't matter.
No, but I mean isn't about being gay.
Yes.
But look, I just loved this production, and I would say to anybody who hasn't seen it yet, go and see it, because the New Theatre always puts on a good Mardi Gras play. Angry Fags is a lot of fun, makes you think, but also is a great laugh. And like I said, look out for the character of Cooper. He's a classic. He's wonderful. I'd like to see this character have another play made about him. So, this is a thumbs up from me. Go and see Angry Fags at the New Theatre, running until the 15th of March.
Yeah, and that's two thumbs up, isn't it, Trish?
Yeah.
2SER. And 2SER 107.3, I'm Roderick Chambers here on Stages here with Trisha Stars. And just walked into the studio is Claire Hicks. Now, she is one of our dance captains extraordinaire. she knows dance, and there's a month-long contemporary dance festival coming up. which is starting on the 1st of March. Is that right, Claire?
That's right, on the 1st of March.
All right. Now, this was a big success last year. Tell us a bit about what you've got lined up this year.
Yeah, I mean, we started last year with what we kind of thought of as a little pilot to see if there was any appetite for a kind of a festival of independent contemporary dance practice in Sydney. We know there's a lot going on, although sometimes people do say, oh, there's not much dance going on in Sydney. And I'm like, really? Do you not see what's going on? And obviously people hadn't seen. So we...
They're jealous because the Melbourne Dance Company, the dance company is, you know, in Melbourne, isn't it? You know, the Australian Ballet.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think... I think the Melbourne dance scene is great, but it's very different from the one in Sydney. And we have a great dance scene here, a very, very diverse set of practice. And this festival year, March Dance, and the clue is in the name, it takes place all across March.
Yep.
is basically an opportunity to celebrate all that great dance that's already going on. Some of the stuff is really what is going on from different dance artists all around the year. So some of the activities are workshops or talks or other kind of dialogues, performances, of course, in theatres, but also presentations in libraries or in studio spaces where people are working, where they throw open their doors to their residencies or their labs or their other experiments. And that's what's actually really exciting. It's a real window onto what is happening in dance in Sydney.
Yeah, I found that really exciting about 2019 March Dance was the utilisation of the spaces around Sydney and smaller spaces, and then all the various dance and also the inclusivity of it as well, where you have disabled people being able to be involved and all kinds of people being involved in the various programs. And it's not only just sitting down and watching a performance, is it either, because you can do workshops and you can be involved in some of the programs yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a really great set of practices by artists with disability. A company like Dirty Feet during the festival is running an integrated workshop. So that's absolutely about people with and without disability dancing together, and accepting that we all have very different bodies, different mobilities, and that this, I think sometimes we have this idea that this one kind of dance and one kind of perfect body for dance, and whilst things like ballet are beautiful, I think they sometimes reinforce those things. So on the one hand, yes, there is the beautiful ballet body, but also dance and choreography takes place in many different ways and guises, and sometimes I say, you know, sometimes they're not even dancing. And of course they are dancing, but it's not what we might immediately think of if we think of like our kind of, you know, picture perfect view of kind of modern dance practice.
Yeah. So if it looks a bit violent, it's acrobats. But if it looks a bit artistic, then it's dancing. Is that it?
No. I love a bit of, oh my God, the acrobats are going to come and kill me now.
Nothing worse than an angry acrobat.
Oh, no, well, maybe an angry juggler is more scary.
They got something to throw.
Yeah. An angry acrobat with acrobat juggling would be probably the most scary image I've now put in everyone's heads. But I think, you know, dance practice nowadays is such diversity, and I think it does become that way as the people who are involved in dance become broader. You come to dance, like any art form, like any, you know, life practice, with different experiences.
And of course dance tells a story. I mean, dance is a physical movement, as we all know, that's basically what it is, and there's music involved, but you can actually tell a story. And I mean, dance can involve words, but even without the involvement of words, the story can be told.
Yeah, it tells stories, it asks us questions, sometimes it asks us to consider things just by a certain experience.
Mm.
So, you know, there's not always a narrative in dance, but I think in the way that quite often we come nowadays to contemporary art and just say, what does it make us feel? What does it make us think? Maybe I don't immediately understand it, but I'm just going to go with it and see where it takes me. That's what dance does. And I think that's something very exciting about dance, to be able to say, well, no, maybe it's not immediately obvious to me because there isn't perhaps a kind of a written text story. But I can go somewhere with dance if I give myself into dance, whether I'm participating or I'm watching. I can give myself over to dance in a different way that I think, you know, in a lot of time now, we don't have that. We don't have what is often a very embodied experience, you know. But we also have dance on screen. We've got a great screen dance program in this festival as well. So,
how does that work? Have you got screens up in various places?
No, it's actually going to be at the Chevelle Cinema.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah,
so you actually get nice seats and air conditioning.
Yeah,
and
so Dance Cinema is one of the partners on the festival. Because what happens is, like, so Independent Dance Alliance, which is my organisation, Critical Path, Dirty Feet and Ready Made Works, we kind of invite people to participate. And the festival really works because of the input of the partner organisations and the artists. Mm. And that's where this all comes. It all comes as a drive from the sector. So an organisation like Dance Cinema will contact and say, oh, my, we're really excited. We've got some great, you know, local and international dance films that we want to share and screen. Can we be part of the festival? Oh, my goodness, yes, you can be part of the festival. Hello.
Yeah.
You know.
Great. So basically you've got 109 events across 26 venues over 31 days. So while we've got you here, please, you've told us about the Chevelle, which sounds so interesting because I love dance on film. But what are some of the events to look out for? I mean, I know you can't give us all 109, but...
Oh, no, I can't. I can't.
That's
why
you need your computer, isn't it?
Yeah, that is why I need my computer. And that's probably why you guys also need your computers, because we have a really great website, which is really super easy to navigate.
Of course.
So you can check that out there. And there's a really great program where you can just click in and have a look and work out what's going on any one day. So you find yourself at a loose end.
So it's marchdance.com, isn't it?
Marchdance.com. Or is it .au? Now you've asked me. That's
terrible. Marchdance.com. That's it. Yeah.
Marchdance.com. So go and have a look at that.
I did buy the right domain.
Don't listen to Claire. She doesn't know what you're talking about. It's marchdance.com.
Yeah, it is marchdance.com. We've said it several times now, so people should
you should know where you're going. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
We had a really great series of talks, talking bodies last festival, and that's happening again this time. So that's a really good opportunity to be introduced to some great individual or collective artists and hear a bit about their practice, and they demonstrate some of their work. And it's a really beautiful opportunity to interact. Dirty Feet's workshop I've already mentioned. We're also, you know, we're partnering with the Kia Choreographic Award Public Program this year. So that's great. Down at Carriage Works, that's sort of a bit more kind of, you know, that's a little bit more expensive for the tickets for the shows, but the public program is very accessible. A lot of our events are free or very, very cheap.
Oh, that's the right price.
Yeah. And that's also because we really want to make everything accessible. We know that not everyone has the price of a big ticket performance, and pretty much everything in the festival is what I would call on the low or the no price index.
Oh, that's good.
Critical Path, we've got some really lovely things. I mean, because we're a professional development organisation for the sector, our work tends to be more sharing people's practice. So we've got some open studio activities, and we've got right at the very end, the last day of the festival, we've got some talks and workshops around archiving your dance practice. So, you know,
you get out the mothballs, do you?
You get all your ephemera and your experience out of you, and possibly your body out of the mothballs, and you see where it goes. No, well, I think for people who are, even people starting out as dance artists, to begin to think about, you know, what legacy will you be leaving and who's going to control that, you know.
And you're kicking off with Dancing the Drill.
Yeah, I mean, Dancing the Drill, we're 15 years old this year as an organisation, but we're actually quite, in many ways, we're quite a quiet organisation. I know I'm not, but we are quite a quiet organisation because we really are like the R&D kind of wing of the sector. But our space in Sydney is down at the Drill Hall on Rushcutters Bay, and over the first weekend of the festival, we're opening up our doors at various times to the activities that are going on there. So people can drop in on artists in residence. There are some presentations on the Saturday morning. We've got a talk by Matthew Doyle, a First Nations artist. He's going to welcome us to country and talk about his practice. And I think in conversation with me, talk about where that relationship to country sits in his practice.
Wow. So you can just drop in at the Drill Hall at any time you like, or else you can just drop in and have a look at the website. Look, I'd like to thank you, Claire Hicks, for coming in here and talking to us. I know it's been a bit of a journey, but we're glad you made it. Oh, so thank you.
No, thanks for having
me.
It's very, very inspiring. I just have to say, Claire, I've taken up dance again this year.
Yay!
That's why you're looking so fit.
No, and I'm just enjoying it. So I'm just so looking forward to getting into March dance.
It's going to be a great month.
I just saw the wildest thing. Watch the sun just walk into the ocean. Nothing I could do. Gone before I knew. It's a game. I can't wait to see you. It's a game. I can't wait to see you. Maybe I belong in California. Came out here.
We've also got Catherine Golden again. She's got something else that she's been out to see. Catherine, what have you been to see this time?
The Campaign, by playwright Campion Decent and directed by Kim Hardwick, is a moving account of the almost 10-year-long struggle in Tasmania to decriminalise consensual sex between gay men. It is one of the more sombre offerings presented as part of this year's Mardi Gras Festival. The play is both gritty and moving, with a cast of 5 actors presenting the stories and perspectives of over 30 individuals who were involved in the struggle. Tasmania was the last state in Australia to retain gay sex as a criminal offence, only removing sodomy from the penal code in 1997. Music and dance break up what would otherwise risk being a dry presentation. The sombre dialogue of activists and the harrowing speeches of conservative politicians and religious figures of the times is broken up with song from the cast, with humble a cappella protest songs, and with witty original cabaret-style music by composer Patrick Howard, as well as with recordings of pop and dance anthems of the 80s and 90s. All 5 actors, Matthew Lee, Simon Crocker, Madeline McRae, Jane Fian and Tim McGarry, give standout performances in The Campaign, particularly Lee, who played key gay rights activist Rodney Croom. Props are minimal and the Reginald Theatre stage is left sparse, leaving it up to the actors to convey the humanity of this historical episode, which they all do to great success. It is incredible to think that consensual gay sex was illegal during my lifetime. As a teenager coming out in the late 1990s in suburban Sydney, I remember the political and media discourse on this issue and how the law had the effect of both reflecting and conversely reinforcing conservative attitudes. The Campaign is ultimately a heartening play, highlighting just how far LGBTQ rights have come in Australia. The Campaign is playing at the Seymour Centre from February 11th to the 28th.
And that's about it for us here on Stages. We've come to the end of another show, Trish. Gosh, there's been a lot we've been able to see this week.
I know.
You've been out to see something. And if you haven't, we'll be back again next week to tell you all of the things that you either missed or you should have gone out to see. So thanks for being with us here on Stages on 2SER, and stay tuned for Film Fight Club.
SEO.